Well, this morning we're back to Genesis. We had a Q&A session the last couple of weeks, and today we're back and we're in Genesis chapter 25. Genesis chapter 25. So we'll start with verse 1. Genesis 25, 1. Abraham proceeded and took a wife whose name was Keturah. Sarah has died. She died in the previous chapter. And he remarries, and it says in verse 2, she bore him Zimran, Yokshan, Medan, Midian, Ishbak, and Shua. He had six more sons after the birth of Isaac. And then it goes on and gives you some information about their descendants. But I want you to home in on verse 5. As it got time, it got close to time where Abraham was going to die. He's very old. It says, verse 5, Abraham gave all that he had to Isaac. He gave all that he had to Isaac. But to the concubine children who are Abraham's, Abraham gave gifts. Then he sent them away from Isaac, his son, while he was still alive, eastward to the land of the east. So there's the verse. Abraham gave all that he had to Isaac. Isaac stayed right there. Isaac is inheriting the land and all that belongs to Abraham. But he gave gifts to all of his other sons and sent them away to the land of the east. This helps explain a lot of things. Now, I don't read Eastern religions, but people who do have shared with me that often they find in Buddhism and in Taoism and even in Hinduism some things that are like they're taken right out of the Torah, right out of the teachings of Yeshua. Let me just give you a few examples. Here's Yeshua compared to Buddha. I had a book at home. I couldn't find it last night, but I found a few of these sayings. It's called The Sayings of Yeshua and Buddha. The Sayings of Jesus and Buddha. And some of the similarities are many, many, many of these. Yeshua said in Luke 6:31, do to others as you would have them do to you. Buddha said, consider others as yourself. In Matthew 25:40, Yeshua says, truly I say to you, just as you did it to one of these brothers of mine, even the least of them, you did it to me. Buddha said, if you do not tend to one another, then who is there to tend you? Whoever would tend me, he should tend the sick. Yeshua said in Mark 8:35, those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will save it. Buddha said, with the relinquishing of all thought and egotism, the enlightened one is liberated through not clinging. Similar, not the same, but similar. Now, Buddha lived about 600 years before Yeshua, and Krishna, and Buddha was from the area of Nepal, right on the border of India and China. Krishna, he was from India, and many of his sayings, many of the sayings recorded there in the Bhagavad-gita, whatever it's called, are very similar to things you find in the Torah and sayings of Yeshua. And Lao Tzu, who is Chinese, also many similarities. Now again, please hear me. I'm not promoting Eastern religion. I'm not interested in Eastern religion. I just want to answer the question, how did they get so many little truths? This is just a sampling of three, but there are literally dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of similarities. Where did they come from? All of these men lived before Yeshua came. Where did they get these truths? Yeshua got his right from the Torah. They got theirs apparently from these sons of Abraham, to whom Abraham gave gifts and sent to the land of the east. To you would be this way. East. Sent them to the east. You see, Abraham knew a lot about the Torah, even though the Torah wasn't written down and codified until the time of Moses. We know that Abraham knew so much of what was later to be included in the Torah. In Genesis 26:5, God speaks us, because Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my Torah. That's the word Torah. It's plural. Torah-ti. He kept my instructions, my teachings, my Torahs. And Abraham, we know, taught the Torah, because it talks about the souls he made in Haran and brought with him to Canaan. He was a preacher and a teacher of God's words and God's ways to the people of his day. And I think this is part of the gifts he gave to these concubine sons and then sent to the land of the east. And this is why in Eastern religions that grew up later on, you find many of these nuggets. Just a thought. Now we go to verse 7, and it says, "Now these are the days of the years of Abraham's life, which he lived, 100 years, 70 years, and 5 years, so 175 years. And Abraham expired and died at a good old age, mature and content, and he was gathered to his people. His sons, Isaac and Ishmael, buried him in the cave of Machpelah in the field of Ephron, the son of Zohar the Hittite, facing Mamre." This is in modern-day Hebron. "The field that Abraham had bought from the children of Heth, there Abraham was buried and Sarah his wife. And it was after the death of Abraham that God blessed Isaac his son, and Isaac settled near Beer Lachairoi." And then it goes through and it gives the descendants of Ishmael. What's interesting is Ishmael also had 12 sons. Jacob's going to have 12 sons. Ishmael has 12 sons. Isaac's father is Abraham. Ishmael's father is Abraham. And Ishmael's sons became the ones who inhabit Saudi Arabia, the Arabian Peninsula, and are basically the Muslim nation now in the Middle East. And though these are cousins to the Jewish people, boy, there's been war between them for so long, hasn't there? And there will be until Messiah returns. But then in the end of the chapter here, we see, or in verses 17 and 18, we see the death of Ishmael as well, 137 years. But I want us to get on to verse 19. This is where I want us to really pick up the narrative. 25:19. "And these are the offspring of Isaac, son of Abraham. Abraham begot Isaac. Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah," Rivka is her name in Hebrew, "daughter of Bethuel the Aramean from the Padan Aram, sister of Laban the Aramean, as a wife for himself. Isaac entreated Adonai opposite his wife because she was barren. Adonai allowed himself to be entreated by him, and his wife Rebekah conceived." Now follow this closely. "The children," there's twins inside of her, there's two babies, two fetuses in her. "The children agitated within her, and she said, 'If so, why am I thus?' And she went to inquire of Adonai. And Adonai said to her, 'Two nations are in your womb. Two peoples from your insides shall be separated. The might shall pass from one people to the other, and the older will serve the younger.'" So the baby who comes out first will eventually turn out serving the one who's born right after him, the younger twin brother. Verse 24, "When her term to bear grew full, then behold, there were twins in her womb. The first one emerged red." The word there for red is admoni. That word is only used two times in the Bible, admoni. He's all red. And entirely like a hairy mantle. So he's red and hairy. Don't you imagine, she's thinking, "Well, I hope the second one comes out looking better than this one." Red and hairy, so they named him Harry. That's what Esau means, Harry. Now, he's also later called Red, Edom. But he's called Red not because of the color of his skin, but because of his appetites. We'll see that in a minute. But he's red and hairy, so they call him Harry. "After that, his brother emerged with his hand grasping onto the ekav of Esau," the heel of Esau, the heel of Harry. "So he called his name Yaakov," because he's holding on to Esau's ekav, his heel. "Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them. The lads grew up, and Esau became one who knows hunting." Now here's Esau, here's Harry, the first one. Look what he is. They grow up, it skips over the years, and now they're adults. "And Esau is one who knows how to hunt. He loves to hunt. A man of the field. He's a worldly man." You know, Yeshua tells parables, and in the parable, there's a field. Then later he explains the parable, says the field is the world. So when you see the word field, think of the whole world. He was a man of the world, a man of the field. But Jacob, was a wholesome man. He was, tam is the word. He was smooth. He was pure. He wasn't hairy. He wasn't red. He was just healthy, wholesome. He abided in tents. He didn't like to hunt and be out in the field. He liked to be indoors. Isaac loved Harry, for game was in his mouth. He would bring home this great meat, you know, from his hunting. But Rebekah loved Yaakov, loved Jacob. Now, they loved both of them. But Jacob was Rebekah's favorite, and Esau was Isaac's favorite. Jacob simmered a stew. We're fast-forwarding again. Jacob simmered a stew, and Esau came in from the field, and he was exhausted. Esau said to Jacob, pour into me now, just pour it in, some of that red. That's what it is in Hebrew. Pour into me some of that red. That very red stuff must have been made out of like red kidney beans or something, with tomatoes or whatever thrown in. I don't. Of course, tomatoes are American. I don't think they had tomatoes in the Middle East. But maybe some red peppers or something. For I am exhausted. He therefore called his name Edom, red. Jacob said, sell as this day your birthright to me. Esau said, look, I'm going to die. So what use is my to me as a birthright? Now, let's stop for a moment. The birthright, what is that? In the ancient Middle East, and even today, the eldest son is called the Bakor, the firstborn. And it doesn't mean he's born first. It means he has preeminence over the other children, and he has special rights. He will inherit a double portion because he's expected to take care of mom and dad when they get too old to take care of themselves. The firstborn becomes the priest of the home. He becomes the one who makes sure the family is taught according to the laws and the commandments inherited from Abraham, according to the religion of the family. And he has a lot of responsibility. Now, with the firstborn, there also goes a blessing. And they deal with the blessing later on. But right now, they're talking about the firstborn status. And Jacob wanted that firstborn status. He wanted that responsibility for some reason. He must have known the prophecy that God spoke over their birth. I'm sure Rebekah told him that eventually the old one, Esau, would serve the younger one, Jacob. And Jacob thought the only way that can happen is if I get the birthright. So here he connives and plots a little bit. He'll sell me the birthright. Esau had no use for the birthright. We're going to see later he wanted that blessing, though. But the birthright, you can have the birthright. And the scriptures tell us later that he despised the birthright. He did not want that responsibility. It was simply an encumbrance to him and good riddance. So he says, look, I'm going to die. So of what use to me is a birthright? Jacob said, swear to me as this day. He swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. Jacob gave or had given Esau bread and lentil stew, and he ate and drank, got up and left, and Esau spurned the birthright. End of chapter. Interesting, okay? So, what about it? It's like, who cares? What does that have to do with us? To me, this chapter tells me more about me than almost any chapter in the scriptures. This scripture is an illustration of me and you. Because all of us individually is a Rivka, and we've got a war going on inside of us. And we have two opposites inside of us that are battling it out. And in the story, what's inside is revealed so we can see better with the war that's going on internally within each of us. So let's make a chart here. I call this chart, two peoples are in your womb. On the left, we have Esau, because Esau is the real physical guy. On the right is Jacob. He's the more spiritual guy. And we remember, the left is always the physical. The right is always the spiritual. Throughout Scripture, when you see left or right, left is physical, right is spiritual. Not one's bad and one's good. It's just physical and spiritual. Esau emerges first. Jacob emerges second. And the same isn't true in our lives. The physical, our physical propensities, our physical appetites, our physical drives always manifest first in our lives. Our spiritual propensities and drives and desires come along later. And eventually, these drives over here must be subservient to the spiritual. If not, you're going to be one miserable human being. Esau is red and hairy. You know, the word Edom, red, or Admoni, comes from the word Adama, which is the word for earth, for soil. Adam came from the Adama, the soil. Edom means red from Adama. It's this red clay soil. And he's hairy. Animals are hairy. Humans aren't supposed to be that hairy. Animals have hair. But Esau, everything about Esau is very physical, very earthly, he's just a ball of physical impulses and appetites. But Jacob is born Tam. That's how you pronounce that word. He was smooth. He was more pure. He wasn't all hairy like an animal. Esau is a hunter. He's a man of the field. Remember, the field is a symbol, code talk for the world. Jacob was an internal man. He stayed in the tent. So what did he do in the tents? Studied with his father Isaac. Studied with his grandfather Abraham until he passed away. He was a learner. He was a student. Esau became exhausted. Nowhere do we see Jacob getting exhausted. Even later on, you never see Jacob exhausted. Because the physical wears out and gets tired. The spiritual does not. Esau had an appetite for red stew. He was red. He wanted red stuff. His flesh was red. He wanted stuff like his flesh. It's a picture of a fleshly appetite. He wanted more of what he is. He was exhausted. Jacob was rested. He wanted red stew, but Jacob wanted something else. He wanted the birthright. He wanted the spiritual thing that Esau had no use for. Later on, we're going to find out in a chapter coming up that Esau later wanted to kill Jacob because Jacob was messing up with his life. And there's a part of you who wants to kill that spiritual part of you. Because that fleshly part of you, its fun is spoiled by the spiritual part of you. Just about when this temptation that you're just like, oh man, I want that. Then the spirit pops up and says, don't do that. It's going to be trouble. And it's like, go away. You hear your mom's voice saying, I didn't raise you this way. And a Bible verse pops in, you know, flee youthful temptations. Right? I mean, you hear those verses, those voices. It's like it gets in the way of your fun. But if you listen to those voices, you live. But your flesh wants to silence and kill that voice in your life. Now, the spirit does not want to kill the flesh. He wants the flesh to submit to it, to be its tool, to do good in the world. But the flesh wants to kill the spirit. And that's exactly the dynamic we see between Jacob and Esau. Esau stays put. Jacob is the one who's on the journey. And the big journeys in your life will not be the physical ones. The great journeys of your life and mine will always be spiritual journeys. Now what's interesting is that eventually in a chapter to come, you're going to see Jacob. He'll get all the blessings. He gets all the blessings. Kind of underhanded how he does it, but he gets them. But those blessings flow to Esau, because years later, after the brothers are separated and come back together, you know what Jacob does with all these blessings? Gives them to his brother Esau. Isn't that something? Your flesh thinks it could do a lot better without the spiritual getting involved. The truth of it is, all the blessings in your life are coming from the spiritual side. It's really the truth. You submit to God. You submit to the leading of His Spirit and to His Word. It's like Yeshua says, I came that you might have life and have it how? Abundantly. But if you pursue the physical, guess what? You don't wind up with spiritual blessings or physical ones. You lose them both. You pursue God. Seek God's kingdom. Seek His righteousness and what? All these things get added to you. That's the bonus. Make your priorities right. But Esau eventually must serve Jacob. But what a joy. And we find that God never speaks to Esau. We never see one place in Genesis where God speaks to Esau. But he speaks to Jacob all the time. God doesn't speak to your flesh. He speaks to your spirit, to the spiritual ears. Understand? Now, I'm going to give you a really bad diagram to try to describe this warfare. In Genesis 2:7, it says that God breathed into Adam's nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul. And this is where I bring in my teaching aids. All right? So, we're going to make the green hula hoop. This is the best one I could find. This one's round. This one's a little bent up. But imagine it's round. Rob, does Beth Kuhn have a hula hoop budget? We need to work this in and replace these. I need these to teach with. But we're going to make this one on the right, the spirit. This is God's spirit. And of course, God's spirit's unlimited. We have a limited circle here. But like I said, it's not a perfect diagram. Here's the flesh. He forms Adam's body out of the physical. He breathes into Adam's nostrils the breath of life. And look what happens. Man becomes a living soul. His body, his soul, and spirit are all one. You see one in operation, all three are in operation. You cannot distinguish between the body, soul, and spirit because they were a perfect united whole. Perfect united whole. But then later some temptations come and the body decides to do its own thing. Now look at this middle part, the soul. What happens with the soul as we follow the leanings of the flesh? It shrinks and shrinks. And shrinks. I've noticed more and more in people I know, their souls are doing this, or their souls are doing this. Let me give you an example. Let's say you see something you really, really want. You want to steal it, and you know you can get away with it. You really want this thing. So you steal it. What happens? Watch what happens to the soul. Your ability to enjoy has shrunk. Because your soul, right here, this is your mind, your will, your emotions. This is where the ability to truly enjoy life is right here in the middle. And the more you walk in the flesh, your ability to enjoy what you get shrinks and shrinks and shrinks. But when you become a living sacrifice and you yield the flesh to the spirit, look what happens to your soul. Your mind, your will, emotions, they grow and expand and become everything you should be. You follow? And what usually happens is they both move together or they move separate. Remember what God says through John? God says, if you draw close to me, I'll draw close to you. So if you're moving to the right towards the spiritual, your soul increases, it becomes abundant. But if you follow the flesh and you ignore the spirit, your soul shrinks. And you are a soul. You're not a body. You're not a spirit. This part in the middle is what you are. Man became a living soul. That's what you are. You are not a spirit. You're not just a body. You have a body. You have a spirit. But what you are is this bit right here. That's your mind, your will, and your emotions. Everybody follow that? Now, God works this direction from the right to the left. The enemy and temptation works from the left to the right. When you look at how Satan tempted Adam and Eve, the first temptation was a physical temptation. They saw the fruit that was good for food. It was attractive to the eye and good for food. That's the body. Then it was also a desire to make one wise. That's part of the soul. And so because the body and soul engaged in the sin, it's through the spirit that God decides to move. He says, I'm not going to move through the body and the soul. I start with the spirit. And how did the enemy tempt Yeshua? Turn the rocks into bread. It was a physical temptation. And then he took him to the pinnacle of the temple. Just jump off. And when you float down, everybody will see you float down. They'll say, oh, this is the Messiah. Because in the Talmud, there's a prophecy. The Talmud, the Messiah will descend from the pinnacle of the temple. So Satan says, just go ahead and do it. You're not going to get hurt. And they'll all see your Messiah. No crucifixion, no humiliation, no rejection. They're all going to embrace you. Boy, what an appeal to the mind, the will, and the emotions. The third temptation was bow down and worship me. See, worship is a function of the spirit. Yeshua says to the woman at the well in John chapter 2:4-2. God is spirit. He seeks those who worship him in spirit and truth. Worship is a function of the spirit. But Yeshua quoted the Torah on all three of those and rejected the enemy. How does God come into your life? He doesn't tempt you physically. He doesn't appeal to your intellect. He gives you this really foolish message about a carpenter, a Jewish carpenter, who lived 2,000 years ago. He was sinless. He was rejected. He died. He was crucified as a criminal. He was buried. On the third day, he rose again. And he ascended into heaven, and he's returning. No proof. But for some people, when they hear that truth, when they hear that message, something deep in their spirit leaps. They say, yes, I know that's true. And then God begins to work on their mind, their will and emotions. And eventually we get new bodies. That's the direction God works, you see? You understand? That's the general dynamics. And you'll see this playing out throughout Scripture. Now, there's an interesting passage in James 1:8. James says he is a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways. He uses this term double-minded twice, but unfortunately that's not how the word should be translated. It's actually double-souled. Double-souled. Here's the word in the Greek. The word for soul is psukse. P-S-U like X-E, psukse. That's where you get the word psychology. Right? We don't have a letter in English that gives a P-S sound. Psst. I don't know how you do that. Psychology. But that's where we get the word psycho. It's psychology, psychiatry. From the word psukse for soul. But when you put the D in front of D-psuksos, it means double-souled. And that's the word used here. It's used here in this passage in James 1:8, and he's used again over in chapter 4. He talks about the double-souled man. Well, how can a person have two souls? What is pictured in Genesis 25 is the battle between these two me's in here. I've often had conversations. I had a conversation this week where we're talking about how part of me wants to do this, part of me wants to do this, and I tend to think of myself, or I tend to denigrate myself, well, who's the I and who's the self? Who's having this conversation inside of you? Are there two yous inside of there? Answer, yes. There are two yous. We all tend to be double-souled. Now, if we can get the two hula hoops to come together to where there's not two, and that's awesome. Here's how it works. And again, another very faulty diagram, but one that I hope will help us to visualize this. I have the spirit on the right, the body on the left. But now we're going to focus on this area of the soul. And there are two words in Hebrew for soul. There's neshama and nefesh. If we revisit Genesis 2:7, it reads like this. And God breathed into Adam's nostrils the neshama of life, and Adam became a living nefesh. So it's like your soul has two sides. It has the neshama, and in Judaism, this neshama is often referred to as the divine soul. It's just something it's not scriptural, it's just a term they use. And they call the nefesh the animal soul. Now, one of these is not bad and one's good. Let's make sure we get that straight. The nefesh only becomes bad if you make it your priority and follow it instead of following the neshama. That's where the problems come in. It's like you're trying to be on a diet and you follow your appetite instead of following what your head says. My stomach says, eat that third helping of ice cream. Your head says, don't do that. Okay, so there's that battle going on. You need to follow the higher part, not the lower part. The nefesh is the part of your soul that's interested in eating, sleeping, reproducing, brushing your teeth, combing your hair, keeping clean, and driving safely, buckling your seatbelt, and all those things that are physical. The nefesh is very important. It's who you are. The neshama, though, is interested in, is what you're doing right or is it wrong? Is this pleasing to God or not? Is what you're doing a product of your ego and your pride? Or is it being done out of humility? Is this something that pleases God or not? It's always consulting God's will, your neshama is. And this is why we don't live by bread alone for the body, but by everything that proceeds in the mouth of God, because we want our spirit to be strong and healthy and well-fed. Because that part of you is going to get strong that you feed the most. And I always encourage you, again, record how much time you spend every day eating food, then take exactly that much time and feed your spirit by spending time in the Word, spending time just meditating on it, speaking with God. It's not a hard thing to do. But we tend to feed the body well and we starve the spirit. Then we wonder why we just don't have the strength to do what's right, why our lives are a wreck. Nefesh and neshama. Let me give you a few other passages that describe the nefesh and neshama. And if you download the notes tomorrow, you'll see all of these printed out. Job 33:4 says, "The Spirit of God has made me, and the neshama of the Almighty gives me life." Proverbs 20:27, "The neshama of a man is the lamp of Adonai." The neshama is the lamp. It's the light of God in your life. It's the lamp of Adonai searching all the innermost parts of his being. You know, these diagrams, the thing I dislike most about these diagrams I'm using is because they're so simple. It makes you think, oh, I'm pretty simple. I have a body and I have a spirit. My soul's in two halves. Got it. I know, you're so complicated. You are so complex. You're like a house that has so many rooms. About the time you think you've discovered all the rooms in your soul, in your house, you find a closet door and open it and realize it opens up to another area bigger than the whole house you thought you already explored. You're extremely complicated. Extremely complicated. You want to understand God, you can't even understand you. This is why the Talmud says, whoever destroys one life destroys an entire world. Because every one of you is as complex as this entire world. How complex is this world? All the fauna and flora, the life forms and the topography and the climates. Okay, that's a picture of you. You are that complicated. That's why you can't live life on your own. You need the God who created you to help run you. And you need to submit to him. And things will be all right. But if you ignore him, kind of push him out of your life and say, yeah, you just stay in that room. I got the rest of it covered. What a miserable house your life is going to look like. You know, Yeshua talks about the wise man and foolish man. They're both building a house, right? Far as we can tell, they look the same from the outside, but one had a foundation. It says one dug down and built his house on the rock. And the rock is a picture of God's truth. That's what you found your house on. That's what you build your life on. A couple more passages. Job 32:8. "But it is a spirit in man, and the neshama of the Almighty gives them understanding." Okay? And Leviticus 17:14. "For the nefesh of every creature is its blood." Its blood is its nefesh. You've heard the phrase, "the life is in the blood." That's not the word that's used. It's nefesh. It's this animal soul part. "Therefore, I have said to the people of Israel, should not eat the blood of any creature, for the nefesh of every creature is its blood. Whoever eats it shall be cut off." Your nefesh is in the blood that motivates your body, animates your body. The neshama is the counterpart to that. And it is something that proceeds from God's very spirit. It's an ultra-spiritual thing. Now, I'm going to erase some of these chicken scratches I put up here. And let's go to the story of Rebecca and Isaac. Now we know that the neshama is like a picture of Jacob. I should say Jacob is a picture of the neshama. He was an indoor man. He stayed in the tents. But we see that Esau, Harry, he's red and hairy. He's a man of the field, a man of the world. He's interested in the nefesh and the physical things. Now, Rebecca, who did she like the most? Rebecca liked Jacob the most. Rebecca is a woman. Women are more spiritual. And the neshama has a feminine ending. In Hebrew, both words are feminine, nefesh and neshama. But in Hebrew, when a word ends in ah, the letter hey, It's almost always feminine. And of course, neshama is feminine. Nefesh is also a feminine word in Hebrew, but doesn't have a feminine ending. It has a masculine ending. And Isaac is the one who really was attracted to Esau. He was his favorite. Why? Because of the food. He brought these juicy animals. You know, boy, they're delicious. So Isaac's physical appetites were fulfilled by Esau. But Rebekah is the one whom God spoke to and said, the older will serve the younger. The older comes out first. But the control, the authority will pass from the older to the younger. And the younger will rule over the older one. And that's the goal for every one of us. That your neshama, your spirit, that spiritual part of you rules over the fleshly part of you. That is a successful human being. And God has given us a handbook for how to be a human being. It's called His Word. And I've always said, and I'll keep saying it, you don't have to teach a bird how to be a bird. They know how to build nests and lay eggs and feed their young and push them out of the nest at the right time. They don't have to go to bird school to learn how to be a bird. Worms, dogs, cats, horses, whales, they all know how to be successfully what God's created them to be. Human beings, that's not the case. There's no way you can be a successful human being on your own. You'll fail every time. Oh, the world may say you're successful because you have a lot of money and you beat down all your enemies. Is that really a successful human being? Without this, we don't really even know what a human being is supposed to be, much less how to become one. Because a human being doesn't live by bread alone like animals do, but by everything that proceeds from the mouth of God. There's a part of you that needs to be fed and needs to be taught because it doesn't come naturally. You with me? All right? Okay, one person is. Good. All right. I'll settle for that. By the way, Esau, a couple things about Esau. He becomes the grandfather of Amalek. And if you've been with us in the past, who's Amalek? The people of licking up is what the name Amalek means. And when you see Amalek in the scripture, it always represents the attack of the physical, the physical drives and the destructive forces of the physical. And so it's just kind of interesting that that's the case. So how do we deal with this? What are we to do? Well, I want us to look at, these are the verses I quoted to you earlier. We're going to go right past those now. And Romans 9, verses 10 to 13, Paul writes, and he refers to this story. He says, not only this, but there was Rebekah also when she had conceived twins by one man, our father Isaac. For though the twins were not yet born, had not done anything good or bad, so that God's purpose according to his choice would stand, not because of works, but because of him who calls. It was said to her, the older will serve the younger. Just as it is written, Jacob I loved, but Esau I hated. Now that's a quote from Malachi. And it's Malachi chapter something. It's Malachi chapter 1. Malachi chapter 1, verses 2 and 3. You can read it there. Malachi 1, 2 and 3. Jacob I loved, Esau I hated. What's God saying here? Did he really hate Esau? No. He's talking about what they represent. I hate when the flesh is out of control and when it's not submitted to the spiritual. Because it stands against me. It stands against everything I stand for. Because the flesh on its own, when you lead a fleshy life, everything you pursue is the anti and the opposite of who God is. God hates that. He didn't hate Esau. Later we see Esau and Jacob embracing one another and being in peace. What he's referring to is what we've just talked about, the things that Esau pictures. God doesn't hate your body. He made it a tabernacle for his spirit. He made it in his image. But when you follow the body and ignore the spirit, your body becomes your enemy. And God's enemy as well. You see, your body makes a wonderful servant, but a horrible master. It's a wonderful servant, but a horrible master. So how do we put these together? I want you to look at three names. First one's Rivka. That's Rebecca's name in Hebrew, Rivka. And here's what the name Rivka means. A device for harnessing two or more animals together for work in common. Is that a perfect name for the mother of Esau and Jacob? The war was within her, but her name means one who harnesses two animals together to accomplish a common purpose. That's your job. That's my job. Because I have an Esau and I have a Jacob at war in me all the time. Esau wants to sleep in when Jacob wants to get up. Esau wants to eat when Jacob says, you've had enough. Jacob, he's a little twisted. He wants to mow the grass when Esau says, are you kidding? Esau, when Robin gives me a to-do list, a honey-do list, says, oh, come on. But Jacob says, please your wife, make her happy. You understand? This war goes on all the time. Sometimes on a very small scale, sometimes on a much larger scale. That's Rivka. Well, how about Isaac? He's the father of these two. Let's look at his name. Yitzchak is his name. You put a yud in front and it becomes Yitzchak, Isaac. But it's based on the root zachak, which means to laugh or to call out. But laugh. He was named Yitzchak because Abraham laughed when he found out that that Sarah was going to have a child. And then she laughed later on when God told her. But if you look at these letters, it's real interesting. This letter on the right, remember the right is the spiritual. This letter here on the right is the letter Zadi. And it's a root of the word Zadik, righteous man. Zedaka is the word for righteousness. And this is the letter Zadi. And it pictures a man who's kneeling with his hands in the air. And he's kneeling to the right. You see that? He's kneeling. There's his knees right there. And the rabbis for centuries and centuries have described this letter as a picture of a man kneeling with his hands in the air. It's a picture of righteousness. He's leaning and kneeling to the right. But over here on the other end of the word, we have the letter Kof. Kof means monkey. And all of us have our inner monkey, don't we? I let mine out way too much. Ask Robin. But we also have this part that's the animal part. Now, the only difference between you and a monkey, well, there are some serious internal spiritual differences. But basically, the drives you feel, all the physical appetites you feel are the same things any monkey feels. The same things. Your body experiences the physical realm the same as a monkey does. And these two are pulling two different ways. Now, this letter in the middle is the letter Chet. And it's the first letter of the word Chai. And sometimes you'll see a lady wearing this letter on a necklace, a piece of jewelry, life. And this is where we live life. We live life in tension between these two. The monkey is not our enemy, as long as it's serving righteousness. But if we don't live a righteous life, we'll live like monkeys. Maybe monkeys with high IQs and intellects and wearing suits, but you're still just doing everything you do for the same reasons a monkey does what it does. You want more coconuts than your neighbor, more bananas, more women, and more authority in the, what do you call a group of monkeys? It's not a flock, what is it? A what? A congress. That's a good word for it, isn't it? I'll go for that. A congress of monkeys. Yeah. That works for me. And oh, there's a third name. It occurred to me after I made the notes up. There's a third name. Remember I told you that Esau was called Admoni. He was red. There's only one other place that word is found. One other individual who was red. He was ruddy. Probably red-haired. Maybe freckled. Who is that person? David, yes, it's over in 1 Samuel. And that's David. Now let's look at David's name. I'm going to make this a little bit thicker here so you can see it. David, his name looks like this. It's a dalet and a vav, and then another dalet. DVD. Okay? That's how you remember his name. David is how it's pronounced in Hebrew. Dalet, vav, dalet. Now, the letter dalet, you have one on each end of the word. The letter dalet means door. Dalet means door. And so it's a picture of like a roof of the door flap hanging down. So you've got a door that opens to the right, and you've got a door that opens to the left. That's how your life is. You got two doors, and you got voices speaking through both doors, both calling you to walk through one or the other. But right in the middle, you've got this vav. Vav means hook, but they say it represents a man standing up. Right in the middle is you, a man or a woman. And you're standing between two doors. Which one is the vav facing, the one on the left or one on the right? One on the left. That's our natural tendency. So we have Esau born Admoni. He's all red. And he completely lived according to his earthy nature. But there's another man born who's born Admoni. He's all red. But he didn't. And he fell a few times, no question about it. The little Bathsheba thing's an embarrassment. But who is David called? He's called a man after God's own heart. In other words, he had an Esau nature as strong as Esau's, but he also was a descendant of Jacob. He had a Jacob nature. And David followed the Jacob nature, and he made the Esau nature submit to it. So you think of Esau, think of David. Esau did it wrong, David did it right. And he had all the same drives. And again, like I said, occasionally you see him fall. But he gets back up, he's a righteous man, and he follows God. He gives us most all of the book of Psalms. He's considered the greatest of the kings of Israel. His son, the son of David, is Solomon. And Messiah is referred to as the son of David, Ben David. You follow? So you see in Rebekah and Isaac and David, these two natures, but you see them corralled together, brought under control, brought into unity. So let's close with just a couple passages here. I'm doing really well on time. My Esau nature says I should be proud of myself for doing so well, but I'm not. But my Jacob nature says, stay humble, Grant. Okay. Galatians 5, 16 to 17. This is what Paul says. But I say, walk by the Spirit. Now, if Paul was writing in Hebrew, he might say, walk by the neshama. He might say, I'm not sure. I don't know. They're very, very similar. Basically the same thing. Walk by the Spirit. In other words, the decisions you make in your life, make them according to this, our spiritual sword. The Word of God is spiritual. The Torah is spiritual, Paul tells us. Walk according to this. Because your flesh will say, do one thing, but look into here to see what you should do. Walk according to the Spirit, and you will not carry out the desires of the flesh. For the flesh sets its desire against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh. See the war going on? For these are in opposition to one another, so that you may not do the things that you please. There's a war going on. Romans 8, wonderful passage. Says, for what the Torah could not do, weak as it was through the flesh. Now, I want you to note something. The Torah is weak through the flesh. It's our flesh. The Torah is spiritual. The Torah is holy. It's good. It is God's own word. And it tells us how to live. Our problem is we're too weak to do it. You know, it's like I want to follow what God wants, and I just can't do it. I just don't have the spiritual energy to do it. So what the Torah could not do, God did. How? Sending his own son in the likeness of sinful flesh and as an offering for sin. He condemned sin in the flesh so that the requirement of the Torah might be fulfilled in us. In other words, you're not excused from obeying the Torah. You're just given the ability to do it now. Through Messiah, we have the strength. We have God's Spirit. Now we can stand up and say, I can do this, and you can. So we can fulfill the requirement of the Torah if we do not walk according to the flesh, but according to the Spirit. For those who are according to the flesh set their minds on the things of the flesh. Are you one who sets your mind on the things of the flesh? Is that what you do? You're always thinking about the next physical thing you need to do, the next goal you have to accomplish physically, the next paycheck you have to earn, the next job you have to accomplish, the next possession you want to possess. Is that what you're always thinking about? Next guy or girl you want to conquer, the next property you want to buy, the next deal. Is that what you think about all the time? Then that means you're according to the flesh. That's where your life is. You're living according to your Esau nature, your monkey nature. But those who are according to the Spirit, they set their minds on what? The things of the Spirit. For the mind set on the flesh is death. But the mind set on the Spirit is life and peace. You want life and peace? And quit doing things your own way. Don't you get tired of doing things your own way eventually? I'm so weak, I get tired of doing things my way pretty quick, usually. And, you know, it's like doing things God's way, you find out it's actually so much easier, so much better, so fruitful. And there's life and there's peace. If you go on further into verse 13, Paul says, "For if you live according to the flesh, you will die. But if, by the Spirit, you put to death the deeds of the body," don't put the body to death. You're to be a living sacrifice, not a dead one. "You put the deeds of the body to death, its appetites, its control over your soul, you will live." There's a simple message. And it comes out of Genesis 25. I love the pictures that the Torah gives us. There was literally a man and a woman, Isaac and Rebekah. She literally gave birth to twins, Jacob and Esau. But God orchestrated these historic events to teach us something eternal, something internal, something spiritual. Okay? We have a few minutes left, so I see a hand up, so let's get the microphones out, and let's go to Ben Walkley first over here. His hand was up first, so there we go. Thank you, Jason.
So if you find yourself going towards the flesh, mm-hmm. what is the, even if you are trying to go towards the Spirit, but you find yourself going back towards it, what's the rhythm, or how do you
get out of it? Okay, yeah. Make sure everybody hears that. Great question, Ben. If you find yourself going toward the flesh, you want to do what the Spirit says, but you find yourself keep going to the flesh, what do? Simple. Feed the Spirit. Make it stronger. This is the food. I don't care how good intentioned you are, you cannot live a spiritual life without God's Word. Reading is not, it's not, what's the word I'm looking for? It's required. We have to study and read. It's not optional. It's not optional. We must have God's Word hidden in our heart. What does David say? "Your word have I hid in my heart that I might not," what? "Sin against you." There's a strengthening that comes spiritually. You may not feel any satisfaction in your brain, and you may not understand fully. Who does understand fully with the reading? You understand a bit. But we chew on it, we meditate on it, we put it in our souls, and we become spiritually stronger. Because it really helps us know who we are. And when our identity is, I'm a child of God. I'm a part of His family. It reminds us who we are. And it's like, people, God saying, we don't do these things. We do this over here instead. Okay? So that's the best answer I know to give. And Peter, yes.
Thank you, Grant. I enjoyed the teaching so much.
Thank you.
My question is two parts.
Yes.
So we have the body, the spirit, and the soul. Mm-hmm. Now, when the spirit and the soul come together, you find the soul.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And from my understanding, it appears that it is the soul that is actually experiencing all the joys and sufferings of this war. Because when the body moves too far, the experiences of the soul becomes very, small.
Yes, right.
Now, at transition, the body that's at death, the body returns to ground and becomes the earth, being moved back to earth. The soul returns to God who gave it. No, the spirit returns to God who gave it.
Right.
Now, what happens to the soul then?
Okay. Great question, Peter. You have a second question too, correct?
That's the second one.
Oh, what was the first one?
The first one you already said yes. Because it is the soul that is actually experiencing all the joy and the pain.
Got it.
The second question was, when they die,
The
body returns to earth, the soul, the spirit returns to God.
Right.
Now, you can't judge the body that has already gone back to earth because it's going to become dust. You can't judge the spirit because it's part of God.
Yep.
Now,
it's the soul.
Of the soul.
Okay, great question. And the answer is found in the illustrated part of every Bible, which is the tabernacle. Remember, I always say the description of the tabernacle is the illustration part of the Bible? And you read the tabernacle and think, what does this have to do with anything? It has everything to do with everything, because everything the Bible wants to teach is pictured by the tabernacle. And in the tabernacle, and I'm going to have to do it, since I have the body on the left, I'm going to have to turn the tabernacle backwards. We're going to put east on the left and west on the right. But the tabernacle had an outer court. Had an outer court with an opening. And the opening was on the east. I know, I'm sorry, but we just have to make it agree with the picture above. Whoa. I'm sorry. I've got it right. Never mind. I'm the ones back. I've been so busy making sure that the left is on my right and the right's on your left, I'm totally confused. Okay, we'll do this right. Okay, here we go. So it has this outer court, which is just made of fabric hanging on these posts all the way around. It's just fabric blowing in the wind. That's a picture of your body. This outer court is a picture of your body. It is illuminated by the sun, the moon, the stars. If it rains, it gets wet. If the wind blows, it gets dust blown all over it. It's very fragile, very weak. It's easily torn, easily damaged. But inside, there is a building. And this building is in two parts. Actually, I had it right the first time. You guys are confusing me. All right. Okay. This building is in two parts. It's made out of these massive beams covered with gold. I mean, if you get back and run into it, you're the one who's going to get smashed up. You're not going to move these walls. They're solid and they're strong. And inside you've got a cube that's the Holy of Holies. The Holy of Holies. That's where God's Spirit would dwell. And then you have the holy place right here. These are a picture of the spirit and the soul. They're in one building. The only thing that separates them is this little thin curtain represented by the dotted line. It's a curtain, the parakeet it's called. Not parakeet, parakeet. And one day a year on Yom Kippur, the high priest would go from the holy place behind the curtain to the Holy of Holies and pray and intercede face to face with God. This is a picture of your soul and your spirit. You get rid of the outer court, these still stand. See, your soul is ultimately spiritual. And you are a living soul because God's breathed this neshama into your body. But your soul isn't dependent on your body. Your soul is dependent on the spirit. Who gave you your character? The things you like and you don't like. Your giftings, whether it's art or music or writing or whatever it is, building. Who gave you those? Those all come from God's spirit. Everything flows from the spiritual. Everything comes from the spiritual. Everything. The entire creation was spoken into existence by God. Everything comes from the spiritual, including your soul. And so when your body dies, what happens? Your soul and spirit continue on. It's a really amazing thing. But the tabernacle is the best thing to describe this. Remember how I showed the two hula hoops when Adam first was created, they were one circle and not two. That's God's goal for every one of us, that we're not double-souled, but become one-souled. I want to finish with this last little bit. There are two words in the Hebrew for heart. One is levav. It's spelled lamed, bet, bet. These two letters on the left are both the bet. Bet means house. And the letter is shaped like a house, with a roof, a wall, and a floor, and an opening on the left-hand side. Levav. And we're told to love God b'kol levavecha, with all of your heart. But there are other places in the Bible where the word is spelled like this. Lev. What's happened? Instead of two baits, you have one. This is our goal. To go from a person who's double-souled to one soul. To where the flesh is so subservient to the spirit that people only see one house. They see a united heart. You got it? That's our goal. And I think old age is when that finally comes. Because that happens in old age, your body gets weaker. The drives begin to slacken off a bit. The appetites decrease. And it's not such a distraction. And you begin to focus on the fact you're going to die soon. And spiritual things become more important. Some of it comes with maturity, but for me, a lot of it just came with old age. And so this is why Paul tells Timothy, don't let the excitement of being young, he warns him, don't let it distract you from doing what's right. And when you see young people like Aiden, you know, who's bar mitzvah today, and just purposing to walk with God, do it young, right? Do it young. Start wholeheartedly when you're young. And there are few who do that. So does that help answer your question a bit, I hope? Uh-oh, he's standing up. That means no.
I get this explanation.
Okay, let's get the microphone there.
So I get this explanation.
Yeah.
But the point I'm trying to get at, which part of the body among the three that really gets punished? Because you have a Christian tell you you're going to hellfire. The physical body has already returned to earth.
Yeah.
It's become dust. The spirit has gone back to God, yeah, which gave it. Now, the soul is hanging somewhere. Is he the one that gets punished? Because he's the one that enjoys all the suffering and the pain.
All right. The question is more about punishment. So I'm going to refer you to the teaching I did 2 years ago called The Salvation of All. And we talk about punishment there. But you know what? To briefly give you an answer, I think most of our punishment takes place right here in this life. At the risk of promoting Buddhism, I want to give you a quote from Buddha. He says, a man is not punished for his anger, he's punished by his anger. And I think a lot of that's true for our sin as well. We're not punished so much for our sin, we're punished by our sin. I've never seen a happy sinner. They're miserable. The more sinful they are, the more miserable they are. Sin is its own punishment. Because your soul shrinks. Your ability to enjoy anything diminishes. And it brings bad health. It brings broken relationships. It brings so much destruction in your life. Sin itself is punishment. So after death, how does the discipline of the punishment work? That's a great mystery. I don't understand it completely. I'm not sure exactly what all happens there. But I do know that God refines. And I know the whatever discipline the soul experiences, it is soulish and it's not physical. And that's a terrible answer to a great question, but that's about as good as it's going to get. Okay? So I keep watching for Valerie to give me the high sign that... Oh, did she come back there? Oh, okay.
2 minutes ago.
Oh, yeah. No, seriously, Dan, the food is here. All right, I'm just testing your Esau nature, see how strong it is, your fleshly appetites. Well, we're going to end. But we're going to draw it to a close right here. We'll close it with a short prayer. We're going to do a blessing over the bread and cup, which means as soon as you get down there, you can start eating. And be sure to come down and wish Aiden well, congratulate him, and enjoy some great food. So let's close. Father, thank you so much for this time together. I pray you'd help all of us in this battle, this turmoil that goes on within each one of us. Help us to walk according to your spirit, not according to the flesh. To live a life pleasing to you, a life that's filled with life and peace instead of brokenness and damage and death. Make us the people you want us to be. And we ask this in Yeshua's name for the sake of his kingdom. Amen.